Hey, what's up? Happy Monday! Welcome to Canucks Talk for another week here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host. It's Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drantz, what's going on, man? How was your weekend?
Really good. Fun game on Saturday. Saw my family. It was my dad's 70th birthday, by the way.
Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Good for him. Happy birthday to my dad. And and then football. It was great.
And then football. Pretty good weekend.
And now we're on a break.
Yes.
You know, which, as Ross Geller assures me, means I can do whatever I want.
Anything goes this week. Yeah, it is. It's bye week here on Canucks Talk, of course, for the Canucks as well as they go into the All-Star break.
We should do a break takes section where we just like...
Just like nonsense?
No, just like empty the tank on the things you think but are afraid to say. And then... we'll recycle.
When people throw them in your face.
We were on a break. Break takes. What do you think?
I like it.
Yeah. Break like takes it on Thursday.
That's interesting. Let's go. We can do that. Thursday, Friday, whenever.
Yeah.
I don't know why you said Thursday.
I don't know, because Friday's, we're going to draft stuff on Friday, and like, I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Friday's
right.
Fun.
Anyways, we will.
Thursday's work.
We'll think of some things to keep ourselves busy. I do think we should do the trade ideas show on Wednesday.
Okay.
Well, maybe not Wednesday because we have the crossover, but we'll figure it out.
I agree to do it. I think we should do it on Wednesday and just like the crossover can be part of it.
Okay.
We'll challenge. I'll call Dolly tonight. We'll challenge them to come up with their own trade ideas.
I like it.
Yeah. And then we'll fold them in. So let's do it Wednesday, but call the show by its name.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Come on.
I'm going to call it the Trade Takes Show.
What?
You can do your thing. I don't care. But I'm not gonna get on board with that.
Okay. The show will be called. Dom, Lena, make sure to call it this in the app. All your trade ideas suck, and here's why.
Very good. Okay. It is Canucks Talk here, so let's do it. Let's start with the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 29th, starting with the headlines. The Canucks go into their bye week and the All-Star break on a high note with a 5-4 comeback overtime win over the Columbus Blue Jackets, trailing 4-1 going into the third period. They claw back and they get the win in overtime. Elias Pettersson, 2 goals, including the overtime winner, and Brock Besser breaks a little mini slump with a hat trick to reach 30 goals on the season, hits that 30-goal plateau for the first time. And beyond any of the hockey takeaways, Drantz, this just felt to me like the pitch-perfect way for this team to go into the All-Star break. Because when I think about the first 49 games of the Canucks season, there's obviously a ton of positives, a lot of really impressive hockey has been played, incredible individual performances. But one of the things that stands out most to me is just the incredibly high entertainment value of their home games in particular, and how many memorable, special nights there have been at Rogers Arena because of this team. Starting with the home opener, right, against the Edmonton Oilers, 8-1. That's a laugher. There was the other Edmonton game that was hilarious as well, where they run up the score. You know, the Islanders game, the Leafs game recently, and that was another one. Down 4-1, you come back, you score the goals, and you send your fans home on an absolute high. The arena was buzzing, and it's been that kind of year for the Canucks, and I thought that was a very, very fitting way to wrap up this segment of the season.
Yeah, and credit to the club, right? Because you're sitting there down 4-1 going into the third period. You're 20 minutes away from the break, 10 days off, basically, like 8 days off between your next practice and that game. And, you know, if you'd gone through the motions in that last 20 minutes, I mean, we probably would have talked about it, but I don't think we would have been, like, disdainful of it. You know what I mean? I think we all would have understood. This team came out pretty hungry. You know, drew 3 penalties in the first 5 minutes. Don't see that too often.
No.
Killed a major penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I thought they were pretty close to full value for the 4-1 deficit, to be totally honest with you. Like, I thought they played really poorly defensively. And I know they had the balance of shots, but you could see the Columbus rush game stressing out Vancouver's defense. And like, other than that Bluger chance down low, I didn't really think the Canucks had generated all that much, despite, you know, what it looked like if you looked at the underlying metrics or the shot counter. Like, I thought they put in 40 pretty dreadful minutes, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And so to turn it around in that fashion, the Besser hat trick part of it, the reaction from Pedersen, Hughes, and Besser on the ice when Pedersen scored the game winner, the intelligent move from Pedersen going around the net to get freed up. And then, of course, Merzlikins was interfered with by... who was the Blue Jacket that crashed the Provorov? Provorov interfered with Merzlikins on that goal, which was hilarious. Yeah, I mean, it's a way better feeling to go into 8 days off with that.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, it would have been... I don't think it would have been... It wouldn't have sparked like a crisis of confidence or anything because this team has done so well, but it would have been a sour note.
It would have been the first time.
And I was definitely thinking when they were down 4-1, I was thinking of the quote you highlighted from Rick Tocchet last week, right? Where he was like, yeah, coaches need a break from their team sometimes too. And that was looming large in my mind. I was like, oh boy, Tocchet's probably looking forward to this break in a big way. And then the team does that.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's just, as I said, pitch perfect and also leaves you with just such a better feeling going into this extended time before a game.
I think this is a good thing to remember too. It's like, put in a poor performance against a really, really good team. Like, that happens to everybody over the course of a season.
Mm.
Like, every team is going to have games like that. Except not this Canucks team.
Even when it looks like they're going to.
Even when it looks like they're going
to.
Like,
clunker.
Uh-uh. No chance. But, you know, like, generate a ton of possession and shots in the first period and get stoned, you know, and then get flattened in the second. And, like, that happens to teams. That happens to teams. It doesn't happen to the Canucks. They refuse.
No, it absolutely will not happen to them. And the other headline here, and we got a lot to get to in the...
Can we dwell on Besser a little more?
Yeah, in terms of the storybook kind of feel that so many of these games have, him getting that hat trick in front of the home fans to reach 30. He's talked about what 30 means to him. It's such an important milestone ever since his rookie season where he comes up just short because of injury. Again, like, what else, what other narratives could possibly be completed, you know, in this Canucks season in this incredibly satisfying, emotional way?
Yeah.
Here's another one for Brock Besser.
Yeah, and so I want to just note, like, now Brock Besser's a 30-goal scorer, and I'm happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
But Brock Besser's always been a 30-goal scorer, okay? I really insist on this. Like, 29 goals in 62 games, and then he has that freak injury by the bench in his rookie year. 26 goals in 69 games, and then the season gets, or no, that's another injury year.
Yep.
Had a chance the season that gets shortened due to the pandemic, although he was likely to fall short.
He was well off the pace, but
was well off the pace, but
he was injured in that season.
The original Lotto line was cooking so significantly.
That's true.
And yeah, he was hurt, but I mean, he would have had 13 more games. Yeah, he wasn't going to get there, but the next year he would have. If not for the fact that it was a lockout shortened season.
56 games.
And that 2020-21 season was so dreadful for the Canucks that we forget
how good he was.
The margin by which Besser was Vancouver's best player on a team that had, like, JT Miller, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson,
mm-hmm.
although Pettersson got hurt, Bo Horvat, like, he was far and away the best Canucks player that year. And because the season was so miserable through and through, we kind of like memory hold it.
Yeah.
When he came out and struggled the subsequent two seasons. Right.
This phenomenon doesn't just apply to Besser, where because of those two shortened seasons in a row, if you just go and pull up HockeyDB, like, guys' rate statistics are so different than their counting, than their overall
totally.
Stats.
You know what I
mean? But, like, it's not just a Besser phenomenon, but he's one of the poster boys for it, where because of injury and because of those weird shortened seasons, the overall numbers, the raw counting numbers, look a lot worse than if you're looking at it from a rate perspective, where, you know, for his career, 363 points in 447 games for Brock Besser, right? Like, that's a really, really good number. But if you're just looking at, oh, he had 45 points and then 49 and then 46, it sounds really disappointing, but you have to factor in all of the games missed for partly, you know, injuries, which, hey, availability is important, but also just reasons completely out of his control there.
Yeah, 100%. You also, like, I mean, going into this season, Brock Besser was a 65-point-per-82-game player. That's ticked up to 67. You know what I mean? Like, as good as he's been, when you look at Besser's career in total, like, this is a guy who's literally always been a top-of-the-lineup caliber piece. And when you really unpack sort of what was happening to his production, especially the last 2 years. And this is also where the rates mess with you. It looks like his power play points have been flat, for example, if you look at it. But when you once you start to adjust for minutes, you know what I mean? Like declining opportunity, and last season in particular, declining caliber of teammate was the story. Besser's had opportunity this season. He is converting at a career best rate. Like, he's been more efficient. I also think over the last few years, even while the production and goal scoring hasn't been there for him, you've seen him graft like an additional layer of puck battle winning on the wall. Mm-hmm. And like his playmaking, especially during that 19-20 season, he really took a leap as a playmaker. And I think he's improved even more since. Now, you know, over the course of this season, you've seen him at the net front, like really be a factor in terms of taking goalies' eyes, deflecting some pucks in, finding pucks. Like the tying goal is a perfect example. You've seen him be more opportunistic in the blue paint, basically. He's begun to use his size a little bit differently to score, not just with like that wrist shot, but also the dirty goals. Mm-hmm. And that's been sort of grafted onto his game. And it's like, we've seen elements of this come along, but I think people's frustration with the team and, you know, I think just like a real struggle to evaluate the contributions of scoring wingers who aren't necessarily shooting 20% necessarily.
Yeah. Who aren't shooting a high number and maybe aren't also in the right opportunities. Right. Or getting prime opportunities at least.
Yeah, well, and in Besser's case too, we should note, like, he had his worst two-way season of his career last year too, which also, and I think a little more fairly, you know, caused the market to react.
And I don't want to say like he was being unfairly denied opportunities, right? Because part of that is having his two-way game on point. So it's just, you just have to recognize what opportunities he's getting.
But I do think he was underutilized right off the bat this season. Like PP1, the Bo Horvat replacement, he's been killing it, like absolutely crushing it. But I also do think the 30-goal milestone, I'm sure it means a lot to him because he's talked about it, right? I'm sure it means a lot to his teammates because you saw their reaction to it.
Yeah.
Besser is a 30-goal scorer, and he has been for most of his career, frankly. Now he's on pace, actually on pace for 50, which is going to be hard to do.
Really hard to do, yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not going to happen, right? Like, a 40-goal season from Besser is likely at this point. I think we'll see it, and I think that's an incredible accomplishment. If he can push for 50, that would be really something special. Mm-hmm. Like, there aren't a lot of Canucks players in history who've done it. You know, you're talking your Bure, Naslund, McGillney class, right? So that's going to be like a fun side plot to watch here because, man, like, a 50-goal season is not something we see.
Yeah, Naslund topped out at 48.
Oh, really? He never hit it?
Yeah. Now, in
so it's just for Ray McGillney?
A different goal-scoring era. Right,
for sure.
Still.
But I thought he'd hit it. Nope. In my head, I thought Naslund had once hit it. Okay. So, really, we're talking about Bure, McGillney.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Bure three times. Man, like that. When you really think about it, like 50 would be incredible.
Huge. Absolutely.
And he's put himself in a position where, you know, just his goal-scoring pace to this point in the season extrapolated over the balance gets him there. But, man, it ain't easy. As the fact that, like, Naslund, Bertuzzi, you know, Daniel Sedin, Ryan Kessler. Like, think about Tony Tanti, Elias Pettersson. Like, think about some of the players who've played in Vancouver and have never gotten to 50. I mean,
it's really hard to do.
It's unbelievable that he's on pace for it. And you know, one of the real, like, the main subplot here is get home ice, finish first in the West, right? Like, first in the West matters a ton. Home ice in the first round matters a ton. Outside chance at the President's Trophy, or I guess they have the inside track, but chance at the President's Trophy, like, stay healthy. What did the Canucks add at the trade deadline? Those are obviously the A-plots here. But Besser chasing 50, man, that would be special.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no shortage of individual milestones to track too, right?
Quinn Hughes believe Naslund never got
Quinn Hughes going for 100, right? Like, there's so many of these positive storylines, and that's a huge one as well. Okay, the broadsheet, the rumor report here on the whiteboard. Lots of different details and nuggets to chew on here from Elliot Friedman today, and we'll start with a clip from his hit on the Jeff Merrick Show, talking kind of generally about what the Canucks might do at the deadline, and also specifically if they could be looking to subtract some players as they go about trying to add to the team as well.
I think they're going for it. You know, I do. You know, I kind of wonder about a couple guys, like in terms of, you know, Kuzmenko, we know they're looking around. I've wondered about Chicago in the last couple of days. Like, you know, if you look at what Chicago's doing, they're looking for guys who aren't signed beyond 2 years, right? Look, like, Foligno, 2 years, Dickinson, 2 years, Mrazek, 2 years. You know, Kuzmenko's one more year, and they need scoring. So I kind of wonder about that. You know, I wonder a bit about Zadorov, too. Like, I think they're going to clear some room to open up. I think they're going to clear some room to open up the ability for them to do something, whether it's Lindholm or it's Henrique or it's Gensel or someone who I haven't thought of yet. Look, to me, the Canucks are looking at it and saying, we're going for it.
That's Elliot Friedman, and a lot in there. Of course, a list of names that's become pretty familiar: Lindholm, Gensel, Henrique, or someone I haven't thought of yet. The Chicago potential interest in Andrei Kuzmenko, which I think makes a lot of sense. But the name that's the most interesting to hear there is Nikita Zadorov as a potential to be moved out in order to create room to make an addition of some sort. And the fascinating thing about that to me is, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things about it, but one, to me, if you're moving out Zadorov, you almost have to be bringing a defenseman in, right? Like, that's just, you have to replace it probably with a right shot defenseman, ideally, so you get that balance. But it suggests a willingness to not just do one potentially really significant move, but maybe two. If you're able to move Kuzmenko and Zadorov, all of a sudden you have a lot of cap space to play with, and you're looking at two potential significant additions ahead of the deadline.
So hearing Friedman's hit on Merrick today really caused my ears to perk up, because at The Athletic we're doing Canucks trade tiers, where we do sort of an inventory of all Canucks players, and we'll include some assets that aren't on the NHL roster too, and how likely they are to move ahead of the deadline. Now, in the past, we used to write like 5,000 word missives, so it all would have run today, but now we have to split them up. So we just did the not moving. And in putting together the sort of not moving, and I want to clarify, this isn't an untouchables tier, right? We're also including guys like, you know, Sam Lafferty, right? You're not moving a guy at this deadline, given where the Canucks stand in the standings, who's bringing that level of speed and depth and positional versatility to your roster, even though, like, the idea of a bottom six guy is like an untouchable doesn't quite square, right? So in putting together this not moving tier, we were debating on some guys who in the past, you know, the organization has had on the block and who have, you know, varying mitigating circumstances. Like Tyler Myers is an expiring, right?
Yeah.
Who, if you'd asked me 8 months ago, would Tyler Myers be a Canuck beyond the deadline? I'd have said like 60-40, no.
Yeah.
You know? And now it's probably like 90-10, right? Like, not only is Myers playing great hockey, not only do they need right-handed defensemen, but his usage has been ticking up. Like, he's really reestablished, as he does every year, right? Like, on paper, every year, the Canucks come into the season and it's like, well, Tyler Myers, if they play him third pair minutes, he'll be fine. And then you get to a point in the season where it's like, Tyler Myers is this team's third defenseman again, right? Like, that's who he is. He always is that guy because he's, you know, steady and big and holds up in tough minutes for the most part, and on and on. So, you know, I think you get to this deadline, and I don't expect Tyler Myers to move by any means. I think the Canucks will hang on to him. I think he's an essential part of what they're trying to do. I think the size, the physicality that he's brought, especially the last like 3 weeks, like, this has been the most consistently physical hockey, I would argue, that Myers has played in a long time. And it's been welcome, right? There's a reason his minutes are ticking up like this. He's been great. Garland's like a key driver on this team's bottom six. Like, I think he's an indispensable piece, my personal estimation of him. And then Zadorov was the other guy we included there because Zadorov's good. Like, Zadorov's a good player. And, you know, I think there's an identity of having all these, you know, tree trunks, these ants on your back end, that I think Rick Tocchet values in the organization.
Yeah, I think they love that.
Plus, Zadorov, like, Myers has played his most physical hockey of late, but Zadorov's the guy who can do the policeman stuff.
Mm.
Zadorov's the most physical player on this team, period.
Yeah, somebody texted, no chance they move out Zadorov. That's made up. You move Myers before Zadorov. Look, I wouldn't say it's a big possibility necessarily, but we know, okay, as much as they like the size on the physicality on the back end, they also love having the balanced blue line with three left shot guys and three right shot guys. Right now, you don't have that. And if you move Zadorov, you open up the possibility of doing that again.
It's also not about the likelihood that these guys move in a vacuum, right? Like, the tier that we're putting these guys in at The Athletic, and this piece will run tomorrow, is the same tier that we're putting Jonathan Lekaramäki and Tom Vilander in, right? So it's not about...
like, these guys are on the block. They're itching to sell them.
It's that if, like, to pick a name that's been out there in the ether linked to the Canucks, right? We know the Canucks want a top six forward, right? Friedman listed Gensel, Lindholm, Henrik. We'll get back into this because, like, the rental market, the more I think about it, the lower I am on the possibility. But we'll get back into that. Let's bookmark that for a later segment. But in addition to those names, we've also heard names like Chris Tanev linked to the Canucks. Well, if you're adding multiple big pieces, you've got to subtract from somewhere.
Yeah, and beyond just Andrei Kuzmenko.
And as the deals get bigger, right, the options you have to consider expand. And that's sort of why we ended up putting these three guys who we totally don't expect to move in sort of a slightly different tier, just because if this team is as aggressive as they could be in seeking to upgrade this roster, there's no real way to do it without also subtracting something.
And let's just use the Tanev name as a hypothetical, right? So let's say you are going to move out Zadorov to try to bring in Chris Tanev. Well, another part of this is, of course, both are pending UFAs. We have heard from Rick Dhaliwal that the Zadorov camp wants a lot of term, that it might be a difficult extension to do between the Canucks and Zadorov because of the term. Well, if you think that you have a much better chance of re-signing Tanev, or that you are going to like Tanev's next contract a lot more than you like Zadorov's, that's another reason why it makes sense, right? Maybe you think he's a better fit because he's a right shot anyways, and you're managing the risk of Zadorov being a potential UFA a little bit as well. That's a big factor here, the fact that there is uncertainty for Zadorov beyond this season.
And last thing, you know, it wouldn't be outside the realm of what we should reasonably expect to see a Jim Rutherford team acquire a guy in November and trade him in February.
Mm.
Like, that happened to Tanner Pearson.
Yep.
In the trade that brought him ultimately to Vancouver, right? Like, we have seen these. We have seen Rutherford be aggressive to the level of renting a guy in season and trading him before the deadline.
Now, I think the difference there is that Tanner Pearson wasn't working out in Pittsburgh, whereas I think you would say Zadorov has worked out in Vancouver.
Absolutely.
The coaches are very happy with him.
Well,
but still, I think it's...
Except his minutes
have
ticked down.
You're right. But I still think it speaks, you're right, overall, to a willingness to be creative and aggressive from Jim Rutherford.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
I mean, put it this way. Next season. For next season. Or for a key third period shift. You can pick one lefty to send out. Soucy or Zadorov. Healthy Soucy or Zadorov.
I think you're sending Soucy out. Yeah.
That's so, you know, he's worked out, but like, they also, Cole or Zadorov?
Probably Ian Cole. It's close.
It's close.
It's,
I mean,
really close.
They're,
but
really
not
good.
It's not like a massive gulf between Zadorov and Cole in either direction.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's just, you're right. It's become an area of surplus to monitor, right? And, you know, the Myers expiring thing, the history, the recent history even with Garland and Myers, for me anyway, that just like puts them in a slightly different tier, not saying that I expect anything, just that we have to be aware of this team's need to subtract if they're going to be as aggressive as, you know, like Friedman and a variety of insiders keep captioning them as sort of tacking toward.
Yeah. No lineup notes, obviously. No lineup notes this week for the broadsheet, or for the whiteboard, I should say. Playoff forecast, Canucks with a 59% chance to win the Pacific. That's the highest it's been all season for the Canucks. Edmonton, with a 16-game win streak, still at a 33% chance to win it. So you add the Canucks, 59%, let's call it 60, to win the division. 30% chance to finish second. That equals basically a 90% chance to have home ice advantage in the first round, which is a huge deal for the Canucks. They're also now projected by the model to finish with 111 points, which puts them in a dead heat with the Winnipeg Jets for first place in the Western Conference. I believe 1 point behind the Bruins for the President's Trophy. So right in the running for all of those.
Okay. The The fun one, the fun bet that I want to track is books have started offering Edmonton Oilers streak related specials. So the Oilers to end up on at least an 18 game win streak. So you're picking the Oilers to win twice here. After the break. Now, their first game's against Vegas.
Yeah.
Which is tough, but they'll be favored in it. The second one's against Anaheim.
Amazing.
So effectively, you're finding a way to take a sort of road favorite and get plus money. It's plus 125.
For them to get to 18.
For them to get to 18 at this point. Which is like, you know, a 45% chance. I mean, that's wild stuff in terms of where we've gone. The only other thing I wanted to note is for most of the season, we've talked about the Canucks being the favorites for the Adams, the Norris, and the, Vezina. They're no, Hellebuck really has taken, he's actually into minus money now in Vezina futures betting. He's been on a 939 run since like a 940 save percentage run, basically since early December. Demko is at like a 936. So, you know, I'm not calling this one yet. In fact, if you like Demko to bounce back here, you can get him at plus 300, plus 350 in some places. He's still the clear second, but this is very much emerged as a two horse race with Hellebuck sort of being in the lead. Going into what I guess the second to final turn, like the the mid turn here, Hughes is in the negative money, by the way, in a lot of books, in a lot of places.
That's incredible
to win the Norris, and you can even find some bets that have him at like plus 110. But you're betting Hughes, and everyone else gets the field.
Amazing.
So some pretty interesting movement. In my mind, on the futures markets those involving like, Vancouver Canucks event, awards winners.
That's the whiteboard. Those are like prime Tiger Woods of the Masters odds, where it's like him even money against the field. That's basically where Quinn Hughes is against the Norris field.
I mean, one thing, you know, once we've talked about Besser, I was just curious to look at it. The Quinn Hughes is 14 points shy of breaking his own record for scoring by a defenseman in a season. Like, he could do that on this upcoming road trip.
Yeah, seriously. That's like by the end of February kind of thing.
And by the way, I don't want to ignore this possibility. Not that I'm like expecting it. It's probably slightly outside, but and you know what? We should get at our friends at Play Now to price this out so that we can talk about it with some like bookmaker precision. But going into the All-Star break with 12 goals, okay? You've got what? 33 games to play. 23 goals, Adrian Aucoin is the franchise record. 11-33?
I'll take the under, but it's a possibility.
I mean, what do you think the price would be, though? Like plus 700? Plus 600? 650?
Maybe not quite that. Maybe like plus 500, something like that.
Either way, it seems like a fun one. Yeah. We'll have to get at Matt and Danny and price that out.
All right, we'll take a break up next. Actually, before we go to break, Coors, the iconic Coors Light Chill Train is heading to Las Vegas for the big game, and it just made a stop in Vancouver, leaving behind
Choo-choo!
A trail of epic prizes. That's right. On February 1st.
And you will know us by our trail of epic prizes.
February 1st and 2nd, from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., look for its frozen tracks at Robson Square for a chance to win instant prizes that deliver big game day chill or the ultimate grand prize, a trip to next year's big game event. Learn more at CoorsLight.ca/thechilltrain.
Choo-choo!
There you go. Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine up next here on Sportsnet 650.